presents 100 to 150 lectures, retreats, workshops, and concerts annually. Dr. Will Tuttle, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be here.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm glad that you've agreed to come on for this program to talk about the vegan lifestyle. Why don't you just give us an explanation first as to how you got into eating this way?
Sure, sure. I'm glad to do that. And I want to just really, I've been listening to most of the presentations so far, and I think it's great to have all this awareness, information, consciousness. These things are really the key to our evolution and to our greater understanding. So I want to thank everyone who's listening, and I want to thank you for helping to put this on. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak here about it. And I also want to say here as we go into this that even though most everyone has been focusing on what we're eating as far as health, I think it's not just what we eat but also how we're eating. I want to say this in the beginning because I'll probably forget later, that I think as we're eating, it's very important to chew slowly and to eat mindfully with a sense of gratitude, a sense of confidence, a sense of love and appreciation for the food that we're eating. And I think it's also really important to be aware of the food and how it was produced, where it came from. And I think the more we're mindful and conscious of our eating and our food, the healthier we'll be on every level. And I also want to mention one other thing, which is that I think eating food is only one form of eating, that all consumption is actually eating. It's taking in. We're eating in a very real sense when we're beholding and viewing movies, music, media, television, radio, network, print, billboards. We're continually taking in, and conversations also are a form of eating, and they can be very healthy or they can be very toxic. And not only the outer conversations that we're having, but also the inner conversations that go on in our minds, our thinking, is a big, huge factor in health. I think the inner dialogue that's going on in our minds, the inner emotional stress that we may be experiencing, or the happiness, or the anger, or the jealousy, or the fear, whatever it is, that these really are huge factors in health that I haven't heard a whole lot be mentioned here, but I think it's very important to understand and to look at health from a bigger perspective than just the smaller perspective that very often we tend to take when we're looking at health in our culture. We tend to kind of focus in and divide down. And that reminds me a little bit of this great symbol, really. It's kind of a teaching metaphor from India, that you have six blind men arguing vehemently about what an elephant actually is. One is grabbing the tail and saying, an elephant is a rope. Another one's grabbing a leg and saying, no, an elephant is a column. Another has got his hands up on the wall and is saying, oh, and on the side of the elephant says, no, an elephant is a wall. And so they're arguing in this way. Some say the elephant is like a leaf holding the ear or a hose and so forth. And so the idea is they're right. They're all correct. They're absolutely right that this, you know, and they can prove it. They have the statistics. They have the science behind it. They see, and they're totally right. And yet they're arguing because they don't see the bigger picture of what the elephant actually is. And so I think that's really the situation that we're in our culture today. And the idea is to try to elevate our consciousness beyond one narrow perspective and see a bigger picture. And I think the more we're able to do that, the more we'll get out of a narrow sort of informational fact-based kind of mentality and into wisdom and understanding, which goes, I think, together with compassion. So for me, it's real. What veganism is about is also about not just what we're eating, but who we're eating. I have a sub chapter in the World Peace Diet called The Taboo on Knowing Who You Eat. And I think we have to understand that when we're eating animal foods, we're not eating a what, we're eating a who, and a being with interests, whose interests are to them as important as my interests are to me. And in my own life, that just to answer your question here briefly, how I came into this, it's really, in many ways, would have been sort of hard to predict, because I was born and raised in a family in Concord, Massachusetts, back in the early 50s, and we ate the usual foods, lots of meat, dairy products, and eggs, and I never questioned it. I had no way to question this, and so I trusted, I think like pretty much all kids, we trust our parents, and basically every institution in my culture, my teachers, my ministers, the media, the government, the corporations, anywhere I looked, this was what we were supposed to eat, lots of meat, dairy, and eggs. This is the intense programming that is injected into everyone, and it happened to me. And I remember when I was about 7 years old, I said to my mother, Mom, the kind of food we're eating, is this what everybody eats? And my mother said, yeah, this is what everybody eats. And then I was getting old enough, so I said, everybody in the whole world eat like we eat? And she said, yeah, everybody in the whole world eats like we eat. Yeah. And I said, okay. And then she came back a little later and she said, well, there are vegetarians. And she said it in this way that I knew they lived on another planet. I mean, they couldn't. It was like, you'll never meet one. They're sort of hypothetical people. Where would they get their protein? Maybe a few half-star people in India, but real people eat meat, dairy, and eggs, and that was the absolute reality for me completely. And I went away, I remember when I was about 13 years old, to a summer camp in Vermont that was affiliated with this beautiful organic dairy, the kind of dairy where nothing bad could ever happen to anyone. And we would go down there from time to time and work and do different things, garden and so forth. And we went down this one time, and there were chickens. And I remember, they told us to catch a chicken. And they just told us, part of the thing was it was an outdoor challenging kind of a camp. And I had been taught how to make my own axe from a piece of ash wood, and I had done that. And so I had my axe, and they basically said, now, just put the chicken down here and on this board with two nails and use your axe and cut off her head. And I did all that, and I watched the chicken run around with, spouting blood and put her through the hot water scald tank, and we ate our chickens. And I really have to say, at 13 years old, I did not have a problem with that, because I had gone through 13 years of the most intense indoctrination that anyone can go through, really, three meals a day, every day eating meat, dairy, and eggs, and I knew beyond the shadow of a doubt that God made animals for us to eat, certain animals, like chickens, that they taste good, they were put here for us to eat, that's their purpose, basically, and they don't have a soul, and if you don't eat them, you will die within 24 hours of a protein deficiency. Now, that was basically, that was the party line, and I totally believed it. I totally bought the whole thing, and a little bit later, probably a couple of weeks later, we were brought down to this dairy again, and there was a cow that had been singled out, and she wasn't giving enough milk anymore. And this is basically standard procedure on any dairy. After 4 or 5 years, their production begins to decline because they're pushed hard. Even on little small farms in Vermont, this is the basic thing. You're trying to make money on this thing. You're trying to maximize production. So even though a cow would normally live about 25 years. After 4 or 5 years. So we gathered around this cow, and we had a gun, and she was the floor of the, it was in the barn, and I remember it took 3 shots to her brain, right in the head with a gun, before she finally crashed to the floor. And it was shocking to me to see this, to see a 2,000 or well, maybe 1,800 pound animal, it's huge, just reduced in front of my eyes to a convulsing urine and feces pouring out, and the blood, how much blood. He had to cut those arteries at the neck, so basically cut her head right off with this long knife. And while she was still sort of thrashing around. And so I was, shocked to see the amount of, what actually happened. But I never thought for a second that we shouldn't have done that, that it was the wrong thing to do. I couldn't even begin to think that there was any moral or ethical thing here, because I knew they're just put here for us to eat. Their welfare really doesn't matter. The only welfare that matters is our welfare. They're sort of props in the drama, and we just eat them so we can live our lives. And they're put here for us to use, and we maximize their use. And so this really, this I just remember this. I guess what I really remember actually was the following year we went back, and a cow. We did it again, and the cow. This time we didn't want to do it in the barn, and we tried to bring her to a place, and she was resisting so strongly. This cow. I think this is something sort of I realized that she actually broke. We had to actually get a chain on her neck and from a four-wheel drive pickup truck because we couldn't pull her. And I think these animals are intuitive. They know they do not want to be killed, just like I wouldn't want to be killed. I would use every effort I could to avoid being killed. And she was doing the same thing. And at one point, she made, I guess, a superhuman, or I should say perhaps a super bovine effort, and she actually broke this heavy chain. I remember when that happened, I just thought, oh, I wish we didn't have to do this. But I never thought we shouldn't do it, really, that it wasn't right. I just kind of suddenly saw her as a being rather than as a thing. And I really think that's what veganism is looking with eyes that see beings when we see beings rather than seeing a thing when we see a being. And I think veganism essentially is coming back to our own inner home where we look with eyes that see that way, but I think that's basically repressed in us as kids growing up. So for me, it was my community, that my parents and my relatives and just the entire community of growing up that pressured me and forced me to see beings as things to be used. I went away to college. I felt that, the same thing happened, but it was during the Vietnam War era, and so there was quite a bit of questioning going on, and I was really getting very dissatisfied with the war in Vietnam and the violence towards the people there and what we were doing, and I was starting to question everything. And I started reading. I was born and raised in Concord, so I started reading Emerson and Thoreau, and I learned that Bronson Alcott. I went to Alcott School. I learned to swim in Walden Pond. I was born in Emerson Hospital, like I said, and I went to the obvious Thoreau School and Alcott School, and so there was this feeling of sense of connection with these people. And I remember learning that Bronson Alcott started the first, a vegan community there where they didn't need any meat, dairy products, or eggs, or where even wear leather, or even wear cotton, because cotton in the 1840s came from slaves, and they didn't want to pay money to support slavery. So I started thinking, that's interesting. And I ended up, from those influences, starting to study Zen and Eastern religion and Vedanta and yoga and other things. That was back in the early 1970s. And I decided to go on a spiritual pilgrimage as soon as I graduated from college. I wanted to just meditate. I didn't want to be distracted, even though my father owned the local newspaper chain and I was slated basically to take it over. I decided to go to California with my brother. And we headed to California. We got as far as Buffalo with no money, just walking. And we walked for months, just meditating, living out, just trying to understand who am I? What am I on this planet for? What is my purpose? What is the true nature of life? What's the true nature of reality? What's going on here? I looked around and I just saw people like cogs in a machine of death, a killing machine that was destroying the planet, people living meaningless lives, and animals and nature being devastated. And I thought, there's got to be more to life than this. And so as I was walking down, I remember very last time I ever fished, I was praying and meditating. This one guy led us, I think it was in Pennsylvania somewhere, I started heading south, and he let us stay in this little cabin he had by a stream. And I remember catching this couple of fish, and then they wouldn't die very easily, and I had to kill them and slam them. And it just seemed so incongruous to be praying and meditating for peace and kindness and love and awareness on the one hand, and then slamming and stabbing and trying to kill these animals. But I still thought I had to get the protein. I got to get my protein. So for me, what a big breakthrough was when we arrived eventually. We walked all the way to the farm in Tennessee. It was called The Farm. It was the largest hippie commune in the world, about 900 people, I guess, at that point. And they were all eating a totally plant-based diet. We would call it, say, a vegan diet, but they didn't eat any meat, dairy products, or eggs. And it was for ethical reasons, basically. It was because livestock. And I said, well, why are you doing this? And they said, well, because so much grain is being fed to animals while people are starving. And number two, because of what they're doing to animals. And I said, well, like what? And he said, well, you know, I mean, they're castrated without anesthesia. They're hyper-confined. Their babies are stolen. They're in very toxic environments. I just saw from what they said this entire nightmare of violence towards animals who are just seen as things to be used. And so while I was seeing that on the one hand, on the other hand, they were every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I was with, you know, with 900 other people who were eating basically vegetables and grains and legumes and fruits. We were, you know, it was the farm, and a lot of it was grown themselves. And I saw there was about 100 children. They were vegan from birth, most of them. They were doing great. They were healthy and strong and happy. They were not dying of a protein deficiency. Nobody was dying of any kind of problems. I mean, they were thriving. So that was it. I have never eaten meat again in my life since 1975. And a few months I went down to Alabama and lived in an event center there, and then eventually to San Francisco, and then eventually, after about 4 or 5 years, for the second time in my life, I found myself in a community. Again, I want to emphasize the importance of community for me, because I think this is the thing. I went to Korea, and I shaved my head and became a Zen Buddhist monk in a Zen monastery in the southwestern part of South Korea called Songgwangsa. And I found myself in a community there that had been practicing veganism for 650 years. So I realized this is not just some, you know, kind of a newfangled hippie idea that's never been tried before. This is an ancient wisdom tradition of human beings for thousands of years, that if you're really serious about awakening spiritually, being a force for healing and love and compassion and caring and sustainability on this planet, then you don't stab animals. You don't cultivate a mentality of seeing beings as things. You cultivate a mentality of compassion and inclusion and kindness. And so they didn't eat any meat, dairy products, or eggs. They didn't wear any wool, any leather, any silk. You wouldn't even actually kill mosquitoes. I mean, it was kind of like you'd put them outside carefully. And I was already a vegan when I went there. I became a vegan back in 1980, so I've been a vegan for over 30 years. But being there and just meditating, you know, we sat in meditation from basically a little before 3 o'clock in the morning until 9 o'clock at night, and the whole idea was to quiet the mind, because our thinking, the internal conversations, are constantly reinforcing this illusion of being a fundamentally separate self, and that fundamentally separate self illusion or delusion creates this whole way of seeing that leads to what in the Buddhist tradition is called samsara, which is endless suffering. And when we can quiet our mind and realize directly that what we are essentially is consciousness, that what we are essentially is the light of life, of joy, of peace, and of freedom, that what we are essentially is eternal and infinite, and that we're manifesting through a vehicle on this planet that looks like a physical body, but that is not who we are. What we are is life itself. And when we understand that directly and intuitively, then when we see other beings, our greatest yearning is to bless them, that we're all in this together. There's a sense of the interconnectedness of all life, of the beauty of life, of the beauty of nature, of appreciating the beauty of nature, appreciating the beauty of animals. We see animals as celebrating their lives. We see human beings as celebrating our lives, that we're here to celebrate our lives together, and that our purpose is, each one of us as an individual, our purpose, this is understanding that it is to find our unique way to bless the world, and that that's where joy comes from, and that's where happiness and freedom, and that's where real health comes from. Our health comes from living a life where we're fulfilling our purpose and looking with eyes that yearn to bless others rather than looking with eyes of predation, where I see another being and I think, well, how can I use them for my own benefit? That's the antithesis of any authentic spiritual path. It's the actual opposite of the ideals of every spiritual tradition, of every authentic awakening that anyone can have toward a higher dimension of awareness. We realize that there is one life living through all of us, and this is the foundation of the spiritual path. And so through this experience of, you know, spending literally thousands of hours in just silence and gradually extricating my consciousness out of the brambles of conditioning that I went through at the hands of this culture, which is a culture of violence and oppression, if we could see it, it's insane, honestly. And when we begin to extricate our consciousness out of this, these brambles and see the truth that we are, then we begin to become, I think, a force for healing. So that's basically it. So I came back to this culture, and I realized that the thing that I can do, that I think is the best thing that actually anyone can do, is to spread a message of kindness and compassion for other living beings, not just in words, but in actually living it. Because the human experience, we are vast. We are so much greater. And we are called, I think, to discover intuitively. I mean, science has a place, but our science is primitive. Our science is just scratching the surface. We have to go much deeper, I think. And we have to understand the interconnectedness of all life, and the great joy comes from that. And I'll just close this. I'm maybe going on too long here. I'll just say that the my own experience as far as health goes has been really good, because I'm, you know, after 30 years of being a vegan, I feel fantastic. I mean, physically, I never did it for that reason. My purpose was never because I wanted to be happy, and it still isn't. I'm not trying to be healthy, and I'm not. I think this whole idea of self-centered health, you know, health for myself. I mean, we have people in China who, you know, killing off to extinction the black rhinoceros in Africa because the horn has an aphrodisiacal property. You know, so we'll kill those animals. We'll confine bears because the bile gives meat. You know, you can make drugs that give you longer life. I mean, you know, I never want to cause suffering for my own benefit. That's delusion. It creates more misery for myself in the long run. Everyone knows that. We all know that in our bones. So but honestly, I mean, I'm the same weight that I was in high school. I can run a mile as fast now as I could then, and I was one of the fastest kids in the school back then. You know, I mean, it's just this great feeling. My vision has gotten much better. I had really I had very poor vision because of just the whole medical industry. In many ways, it puts people in, it creates a lot of suffering. I had braces, you know, I'm eating a lot of dairy, you know, I had all these problems, and I've been able to heal a lot of things, and I feel enormously healthy and happy and exuberant and grateful for this human life, and my greatest yearning is to try to spread this vision that we can live on this planet in peace. There's nothing stopping us except for the conditioning that we receive at the hands of our culture, which is the conditioning of eating animal foods. That's the core of it. And I'm happy to go into that more in depth. That's actually what I'm here to do. So what do you think, Kevin? Do you want me to just keep talking? Do you have questions that you want me to answer? Or?
well, what I do want to hear about that. I'm also interested in you know, the roots of veganism personally. Like, where did the word come from? Uh-huh. You know, how did that start? And then yes, absolutely share that next thought.
Right. Okay. Yeah, for me, in looking at the word vegan, it goes back to Donald Watson, British guy in 1944. He was a member of the Vegetarian Society in England. And I was just reading the very first issue of the Vegan News, the very first time the word vegan was ever used, and he wrote it. And even back then in 1944, he said, there's massive cruelty in dairy. 40% of all the dairy cows are, you know, have tuberculosis. I mean, even back in the 40s, in the good old days, you know, when people say, let's go back to the good old days. Even back then, it's misery and sickness and death. And he said, we want to create a world where we take it all the way. And because there's so much cruelty in dairy and eggs. So he wanted to create a word, and he did, and he wanted it pronounced vegan. That's the only reason we don't say vegan or vegan or whatever, because Donald invented the word, so he gets to say how it's pronounced. And he said, "Vegan." The actual quote is, veganism is a philosophy and way of life which seeks to exclude, as far as possible and practical, all forms of cruelty to and exploitation of animals for food, clothing, or any other purpose. So it's simply the yearning to live my life to minimize the cruelty and violence towards other animals, humans or non-humans, the other animals, to live a life of non-violence. So in my own experience, since I've spent, you know, I have a PhD from Berkeley focusing on philosophy and my years teaching comparative religion and so forth, what veganism is essentially is ahimsa, which is nonviolence. It's simply living life to minimize violence. And the idea is that as soon as we are violent, as soon as we look with eyes of harming others for our own benefit, we create not only suffering for them, but we create suffering for ourselves. We put ourselves into bondage. When we hurt someone else, we hurt ourselves even more because we disconnect from the roots of happiness in ourselves. We desensitize and numb ourselves to the precious light of kindness and tenderness and gentleness and mercy, which really are the core of what we are and of our happiness. So what veganism is a modern and new iteration of the ancient word ahimsa, which is nonviolence, love, compassion, caring, inclusion, which is the core of every spiritual teaching. But it's not just the core of every spiritual teaching, it's the core of every culture, every culture's essential wisdom. Like, for example, as a Buddhist, when I, there's what are called the five precepts, which are the five rules, in a sense, of living. And they are don't kill, don't steal, don't lie, don't commit sexual misconduct, and don't use drugs or force drugs onto others. And these five precepts are actually five universal taboos. Every culture on the face of the earth has those five same exact taboos. Anyone who does those things to others will face consequences. And they, you know, because we want to protect our interests, we don't want to be killed, we don't want to be confined, we don't want to be stolen from and lied to and manipulated and drugged and sexually abused. And yet, what we do to animals routinely for food is exactly that. And so what veganism is saying, let's include animals. They are sentient beings. Their interests are to them as important as my interests are to me. The only reason people 150 or 200 years ago in the south of the United States could brutalize black people in horrific ways was because they said, well, you know, we own them. They're our property. They're just black people. You know, we look back on that time and we say, man, that was a horrible time. It reduced not only black people but white people. Everybody got hurt. Everybody was brought out the worst in everybody. And it's the same thing today with animals. We have a situation where we are routinely committing these five things to animals used for food on a massive scale. We're not just talking about, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there. We are killing, in the United States alone, a very conservative estimate, 75 million animals every day. This is massive. This is the number one defining feature of the culture that we're all born into. And what is the feature of the mentality that's required to do that? What does it take a group of only 300 million people, what does it take them to kill 75 million animals a day? We have to look deeply into our culture's programming and mentality, and we will understand ourselves finally. We do not understand ourselves. We have no idea why our efforts to create a world of peace and freedom and justice and sustainability are fruitless, because we don't realize that with every meal we are sowing seeds that are exactly the opposite of that. And so this, I think, is the essential thing to understand what veganism is. The roots are this ancient wisdom tradition, and it goes way, way, way back. I work quite a bit with the Jains, and they're considered the oldest religion in India, pre-Vedic, you know, going way, way, way back. And it's so interesting that ahimsa is the core of the most ancient religion that we can find. They don't eat any meat. A lot of them don't eat any dairy. They're very, very particular about this. And I think this shows that at the ancient level, if we go back far, we'll find traditions of compassion, actually. So those are the roots.
Great. So let's move on to the next question that you were talking about before.
Okay, so what I was talking about before is that I think we need to look at health in a bigger level. We need to look, you know, like the elephant, you know, not just one little part. We have to look, and because we mostly think of health, we think of physical health. But I think we have to understand that there's much more to health than physical health. There's psychological health. If we're not psychologically healthy, physical health is not going to help us a whole heck of a lot if we're neurotic and so forth. So these are very much connected. There's also spiritual health. And I think, again, this is even perhaps even more important. There's also cultural health. If we live in a sick culture, then we're not going to be happy. And then finally, there's environmental or ecological health. There's these five levels of health, and we are embedded in them. And if you look at eating animal foods, no matter where they come from, whether it's hunting, I mean, hunting is probably the least harmful, but as soon as we own animals, as soon as we have any sense of ownership, of property, I mean, the sense that, you know, owning another being is violence. Right there, as soon as there's any concept of owning a being, it's violence. Because if I think I own another being, number one, it's a delusion. We do not own another living being, ever. And so if I say this is my whatever, my cow, my pig, my chicken, my fish, we are committing violence right there. And yet the violence goes far beyond ownership. It goes into, you know, stealing from them, stealing their purposes. And it also goes to humans. I think we have to really understand this. For example, right now on this planet, we are growing enough food to feed between 12 and 15 billion people. There's no question about this. This should be, to me, a headline every day in the New York Times. This great news, we're growing enough food to feed 12 to 15 billion people. We are. I mean, we live in an RV. We travel around the United States. What you see when you travel this country is massive monocultures of corn and soybeans, the most toxic, horrible places you can ever imagine, where we're growing huge amounts of grain, and it's not to feed people, it's to feed animals who are hyper-confined in stinking sheds where you don't even see them by the hundreds of thousands, chickens and turkeys and pigs and factory farmed fish. I've been to those places too. And this is incredibly toxic and devastating to the earth. They're genetically engineered. They're saturated with toxic pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. Any other plant that tries to live there, we kill. Any animal that tries to live there, we kill. This is doing plant agriculture the way we do animal agriculture, as domination. And so what we're doing to the earth is devastating. And then what we're doing to other human beings is devastating, because we're growing so much grain, we could easily feed everyone, and yet we are allowing, and not only allowing, we're actually forcing. We create a system that forces roughly a billion people, our brothers and sisters, into starvation. I mean, they're starving. We have roughly a billion people starving, and then we have roughly another billion at the other end of the bell curve who are suffering from diseases of eating excess grain and legumes like soybeans and alfalfa that are processed through animals who are hyper-confined. So these are the people we all know. We don't have probably enough to go into it, but, you know, these are the people in our culture and the other rich cultures, the rich of the world, who are suffering from heart disease and strokes and osteoporosis and diabetes and kidney disease and obesity and all the diseases of eating excess animal foods. So that's one massive suffering of cultural sickness that we're creating. The other is the people who have to do this work for us. And this is something that is not going to go away. We have to understand this. If we want to take out our wallets, if I want to take out my wallet, and I want to pay someone to have a prime rib or a cheeseburger or a hot dog or some, you know, organic doodad, whatever it is, some piece of deer antler or whatever, you know, someone somewhere is going to have to do the work of confining and stealing and killing and electroshocking other living beings and owning them as property, which is violence. All of this is violence. And so we have today a whole class of people who are slaughterhouse workers and factory farm workers who do jobs, and these people have the highest rates of suicide and drug addiction and alcoholism and spousal abuse and child abuse, and their lives are terrible. You know, and how do we think that we can have a life ourselves and have a life as a culture that's healthy when we have whole armies of people where we pay them to bring the worst out in them, and they go home and they do the same thing to people in their communities? You know, this violence begets violence. And this is what Martin Luther King said. You know, this is what all the great teachers have said. They have said, we are all interconnected. Martin Luther King said, violence anywhere hurts everyone everywhere. We're all connected. So, and the same thing is true. This is why veganism is so important, because compassion anywhere helps everyone everywhere. We're all connected. So we, as we live our lives with mercy and kindness, and actually not just talking about it, but actually behaving in that way and living in that way, we create a world that helps everyone on every level. And this is the, I think, the foundation of our ability to actually create a world of peace and freedom for everyone. It's definitely within our capacities to do so. And I think we have to see that true health encapsulates everything, because eating animal foods is the driving force behind the environmental devastation that we're seeing on this planet. And I could talk a long time about that, but I noticed not many people actually even brought that up. And I think maybe I'll just say a few words about that. Does that sound like a good idea? Just go into that.
I'd like to hear about that, because one of the things that has been discussed back and forth on the blogs around the event as well has been, you know, some people arguing that you know, a pure vegetarian society, say America turned vegetarian overnight, you know, there wouldn't be enough land to grow all the crops, and clearly you've just kind of stated that that's not the truth. So I want you please address some of those issues. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, it's absurd. I mean, what Voltaire said, if you believe absurdities, you will commit atrocities. And that's the problem. People believe absurdities. We can grow plenty of food to feed everybody easily if we eat a plant-based diet. I mean, it's obvious. We have people in little, you can just go online and see some of the gardens that people are creating in, like in the suburbs of Los Angeles. One little suburban house in L.A. is growing enough food to feed, you know, 30, 40, 50 people. Gardens are the way to go. We can garden intensively. Just drive around this. There's so much land. The land is being enslaved to grow grains to feed the animals. Most of the state of Mississippi is growing massive amounts of corn and grains to feed the catfish, who are then fed to people or fed to other animals to fatten them up. Most people don't realize that we're growing huge amounts of grain to feed to animals, who are then fed to other animals, and this whole feeding of animals to fatten them up to make them give more milk. For example, dairy cows eat huge amounts of fish meal to make them give more milk, and this waste of resources, the incredible waste of ocean life. We're fishing the oceans, we're devastating them. I mean, we have long-line fishing operations and massive trawlers that just rip all the everything out of the oceans, virtually everything. They're being destroyed, and the demand for fish is literally infinite, because we're not just feeding humans, we're feeding all these livestock. And then the demand for land is infinite to feed livestock. We go down to Ecuador, we have a house down in Vilcabamba. We go down there, and we see the devastation to the forest and to the rainforest. Every single second, an acre of rainforest in Brazil is being just cut down, burned, and it's not. And the driving force behind it is one thing, and that's meat eating. It's to clear land to grow soybeans to feed factory farm pigs, chickens, cows, turkeys, ducks, fish, other animals, and to graze those animals. Huge corporations from the United States and Europe are going down there. They're funding these, Cargill and Smithfield and Purdue and ConAgra. These companies are going down there, and they're setting up McDonald's and Burger King and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all this stuff down there, and they're just destroying the rainforest. And when you cut down forests, you're not just cutting down some trees. You're destroying whole webs of life, of information, of communities, of animals and birds and amphibians, and you know, we're destroying this planet to eat because we want to eat meat. It would take a fraction of the land, a fraction of the oil, a fraction of the water to feed people if they were eating a vegan diet. It's between 50 and 20 to 1 in terms of, like, if you have someone eating a standard American diet, you have 15 to you have one person eating a standard American diet, and you can feed 15 to 20 to 25 people who are eating a plant-based diet with the amount of land and petroleum and water that that one person is using. And, you know, you've got to, I mean, it's ridiculous. We have to see that the amount of pollution, the air pollution, the water pollution, the soil devastation, it's caused by massive amounts of manure. We do not need to have animals to fertilize the soil. That's absurd. We can do veganic or, you know, plant-based agriculture has been done for thousands of years. We use cover crops. We can use compost. We just have to develop a will. We have to want to change. We have to understand that if we do not change our food system in this country, we will not survive. If we do not understand the significance of this, we will destroy this planet and ourselves and pretty much all the other animals without even knowing why it happened, because we're blind to the ramifications of our food choices. And the whole spread of genetically engineered crops, which is destroying the whole genetic structure of life on this planet, is the same mentality. It's a mentality of domination and violence. It's the same mentality of when we're going to dominate animals and use them against their will, and now we're going to dominate plants and use them against their will. We're going to dominate ecosystems and use them against their will, and then we're going to dominate people and use them against their will. What veganism is saying, no, I'm not going to be part of that. I am going to live a life where I include others in the compassion and awareness that we're all in this together. And it brings beauty, it brings significance, it brings, it's an actual positive change that we can make. And I think this is the reason that we have to understand our situation right now. For example, when I hear people who are advocating to eat meat or dairy products, there's only two reasons that are ever given. People say, I like it. Okay, tastes good. You know, I'm going to do it because it tastes good. Well, I mean, that reason is absurd. I mean, you know, I can see somebody, you know, going and raping somebody and say, well, you know, I liked it. It felt good. There's no reason to harm others because you like it, for gosh sakes. And it's because they've been programmed and indoctrinated into it. But there's only two reasons. One reason is health. People say, well, I just can't be healthy if I don't eat meat, dairy, and eggs. You know, this. I mean, we've already had people on this great health debate, Dr. Furman and Dr. Goldhammer and others, who have, I think, clearly shown the benefits of a plant-based diet. I think this is really obvious. The health idea. I mean, anyone can say they won't be healthy. I used to do that. When I was a kid, you know, I didn't want to go to school. I'd say to my mother, you know, Mom, I don't want to go to school today because I don't feel good. And she'd say, oh, okay, you know, and then, you know, then I feel a little guilty, and so I'd really make myself feel bad. And pretty soon I felt terrible. You know, I mean, we can will ourselves into anything. We have to understand that we have to understand nutrition at a deeper level. I think that's true. But what I'm saying is there's only two reasons. One is health. And the other is history. You know, people say, oh, this is what we always did. You know, this is how people have always done it. And if we tell people, when people are eating animal foods, and they're basically addicted to eating animal foods, and they, not only that, there's massive social structures in place that make it difficult for people not to eat animal foods. I mean, just the way the food system is set up, how we are naturally very gregarious. We want to please everybody. We want to please our boss and please, you know, and if we're a vegan, then maybe we won't please people. So we just want to go along. We want to be like everybody else. And so, you know, this whole thing of just wanting to go along, that's really the thing. But I think we have to remember what Krishnamurti said. He said, it is not a good idea to be well-adjusted to a sick society. You know, and we want to be well-adjusted, but it's not a good idea to be well-adjusted to a sick society because we then take on the same sickness. And I think when we look at history and we try to figure out what went on before, we have to realize, first of all, We don't know what happened before. We really do not know. We have official stories. The official stories are put in place in order to keep the present the way it is. You know, what happened on 9/11? Well, we have the official story. What happened to John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King? Well, we have the official stories. We know it's all a bunch of lies, if we have any sense, at all. But the official story is put in place to keep the present order in place. And we have official stories of how people used to live and what they used to do. And the same thing is true in our own individual lives. If someone is miserable in their life, they'll look back and they'll find all the terrible things in their childhood, the bad past that they had, to make them the way they are. And if they heal and begin to feel better about themselves, suddenly their past will begin to change and they'll begin to see, wow, there were some good things that happened. And the same thing is happening with us. When we have a bunch of male anthropologists or meat eaters and are looking back in the past, that's what they find. And as we begin to heal and we begin to have more women and more people who are not just totally into meat eating begin to look back at the past, they begin to, it's a little different. Now we're seeing to see that actually there was whole periods of time when people didn't eat so much meat, or maybe they didn't eat at all, or there's massive disagreements about these things. And the point I would make is, anyway, when we're looking at the past to justify our present, what kind of excuse is that? I remember this beautiful story by the Buddha. He said, if you've been wounded by an arrow and you're hurt, it's not very wise to look into the past and say, well, I'm not going to treat the wound. I'm just going to find out who shot the arrow, why they shot the arrow, where they were when they shot the arrow, and we'll sort of analyze all that forever. No, look, take the wound, take the arrow out of the wound and heal the wound. This is the path of wisdom. And the same thing is true. Whatever people did in the past, for whatever reason they thought they needed to do it, causing war and the domination of women and violence, it's continual. Very violent kind of cultures that we're in, we have to see that we do not have to do the same thing today, that we are free to change our behavior. And I would suggest to look to the future. What kind of a future do we want to build? Do we want to build a future of abundance, of freedom, of joy, of harmony, of peace? And how can we do that? And we see that we've been given this gift of bodies that don't require any animal to suffer to feed us. This is the gift we've been given. And this is the essential reality. This is the essential irony of our situation, I think, is we've been given this gift, and yet we are born into a culture, all of us, where we're taught from the time we're born, basically, to take that gift and throw it back in the face of the benevolent creator and say, nope, we're going to kill animals anyway. we're just going to do it anyway. And so I think it's important to understand this, that anyone who's eating animal foods, anyone at all who's eating animal foods in this culture, is only doing it for one reason. And that one reason is because they've been forced into it by their culture. And they're continuing to be strongly influenced by their culture. And so it takes a lot to question that at a deep level and to look and to understand the roots of this deeply enough and clearly enough to stay with it. And yet the rewards are enormous, because I think the rewards are that we begin to feel into the beauty and interconnectedness of all life. I spend time every day wandering this beautiful earth, loving the beauty of nature and trees and birds and squirrels, and having, feeling and actually having experiences with animals when they come up close to me and we communicate together. I mean, this is the frontier for human beings, the frontier that where we're supposed to go is to become compassionate, kind, merciful people with each other, and to live and to create gardens where we grow our own food, and we can then, all this massive amount of land that's been clear-cut and destroyed, let the forest come back, let wildlife come back, because we don't need very much land. We could have a lot, even more people. I think this world could hold 10 billion people if we're vegans, and have plenty of land for wildlife. And the forests would be healthy, the rivers would be healthy, the oceans would be healthy. We can grow a huge amount of land. Look at what they're doing in Russia. in the Dacha movement. They gave everybody in Russia who were living in the cities back at the end of the communist era a little dacha, a little piece of land, very small, like just 1,000 square meters, enough to make a garden and have a little tiny house. And they'd go there on the weekend. These dachas are growing massive amounts of food, 70 to 80 to 90% of all of the fruits and vegetables and potatoes in Russia are coming from these dachas. You know, this is the way we can live, and we don't have to live this way of violence. We don't have to think that we're kind of stuck here and we can only have a few people and they're going to go out and kill animals. You know, this is we can create a world where we begin to respect animals, where we begin to learn from them, we begin to celebrate our lives with them and live a life in harmony together. There's no reason not to. This planet is abundant. It can create enough food for everyone easily. It's already doing that if we would just stop eating animal foods. And again, the only reason we're doing this is because we've been programmed by a toxic program to do that. And the underlying mentality of doing this, I think, is what we need to look at because it's really at the core of all of our dilemmas. And I think this is the great adventure that we're called to go on. If we're a human being in this culture, we are called to go on an adventure of understanding ourselves and our culture. And that adventure is the adventure of looking deeply into the food system on this planet and seeing what the reverberations are. What are the ramifications of paying someone to kill animals for food? What does that do? Because the animals take it. You know, if you kill animals for food, you confine them, whatever you do to them, they don't sue you, they don't retaliate. But our violence towards them retaliates, and that's the thing. I think we have to understand how the violence retaliates. And I could talk about that if you'd like. I could go into that now or whatever direction you want to go, but I'm happy to go into this more in depth because I think, you know, I still haven't gone into it as deeply as I could.
Well, what I want to, because we're running short on time here, I want to bring it back to how do we get there. So you know, uh-huh. is the local farm movement a step towards, or is that kind of a step in the
yeah.
wrong direction? You know, like, so how does that, you know, how does even local farm with animals, you know, with small, you know, locally raised animals and killed in the local areas. I mean, is this a step towards where we want to go, or how do we get there?
You know, I think the path to there essentially is consciousness. We have to live a life of radical inclusion, and I think animal agriculture in any form is not a good idea. That we have a technology. I mean, we have a pretty good basic technology of transportation and of energy, and we could easily, I think, I think there's a lot, I think a lot is being kept from us by large corporations. There's a system in place which is enslaving everyone, and it's the large corporations and forces behind them. And so I think what we need is a grassroots vegan education movement where people understand these principles, that the mentality of eating animal foods is what is the real problem. Because there's two kinds of agriculture. There's animal agriculture and there's plant agriculture. And animal agriculture from the very beginning brought out the worst in people. Where the animals have always resisted. They do not want to have their babies stolen. They do not want to have their milk taken. They do not want to be impregnated against their will. We have to do that. It's violence. Any animal agriculture is violence. And so there's always confinement. There's always the stealing of the babies. There's always the killing of the males in any dairy operation and females too. And so there's always violence. And what we need, I think, to understand is that we can easily live without violence. We're not born into some kind of hell realm where we're only going to be happy if we're violent. This is a beautiful, benevolent universe. And so I think the way there is local, small-scale gardens and spreading the vegan word so people understand this, because if they don't understand the underlying philosophy and importance of this, that eating animal foods leads to reductionism, it has the roots of elitism and privilege built in, because the subtext of every meal is that certain beings are inherently superior to others. It has inherent within it the domination of the feminine principle. We have within us the Sophia, I call it in the Ropi side, this inner wisdom of compassion, and that is destroyed by dairy products especially. You know, we have adults drinking milk. What we have is a system of infantilization where we turn adults into infants and make them compliant and easily manipulated, disconnected. It's a program to keep us, that's injected into us. And so I think the way there is for us to question everything that this culture has done. You know, in this little hour, there's not anywhere near enough time to go into the history and the roots of this. But I think the way there is to transform ourselves, each one of us, to transform ourselves, to live a life as profoundly as we can in alignment with what veganism is, which is radical inclusion and including all beings within the sphere of our compassion. It's letting go of the materialism and the predation and the disconnectedness and denial which are inherent in eating animal foods, and then to let the solutions come from there. The solutions are in creating communities where people are living this, online communities, physical communities, and local veganic culture, gardens. We can do it. It's happening already in places. And in California, in Canada, I've talked to people a lot of different places that are growing veganically, which means organic but without bone meal, blood meal, and manure and all that stuff. We do not need animals. We do not need to dominate animals to be healthy. It's absolutely unnecessary. And I think that's the way there. It's to get back in touch with our basic confidence, because if we're eating animal foods, on some level, we do not feel good about ourselves. We don't respect ourselves because we're not respecting others. We're not respecting animals. And to get back into our essential self-respect, our essential wisdom, and let that guide us, the wisdom of compassion and kindness and inclusion, we will be healthy. We can create a world of joy. We can create a world of peace and abundance. The way out is through. The way forward is through what I believe is a vegan revolution of benevolence, of kindness, of inclusion, and it's happening. It will happen. It's inevitable. It's actually inevitable. I mean, this is going to happen, and it's already happened. I mean, in the fullness of time, every one of us is going to give up the knife and the gun and the eye of domination and manipulation and using others as instruments for my own benefit, and realize that we are part of a celebration of beauty and love, and that we can create this together. And when we do, we'll see massive changes, I think, in animals. We'll see changes. We'll see huge changes. And I think these things are around the corner. I think we're really on the crest of a breaking wave of consciousness on this planet, of higher consciousness. And I think this whole great health debate is a manifestation of that. And I want to encourage everyone to go forward. Don't look back and see all the violence and the horror that people, you know, inflicted on animals. They go out and you go out into the woods and have animals running away from us in terror. Let's be the force for healing. We can, each one of us, do it. And as we do it, we can transform our planet. So I want to just thank you, Kevin, for making this this possible for all of us.
Well, thank you for being a part of it. Where can someone find out more information about you and what you do?
It's just my books, The World Peace Diet, and worldpeacediet.org is probably the best website to go to, worldpeacediet.com as well. We have the Prayer Circle for Animals. You can Google that. We have, we're doing some trainings and things too. But the main thing is, you know, I don't have anything to sell really. It's just the idea of kindness and inclusion to all beings.
Well, great. This has been Dr. Will Tuttle. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Much love.